that so much?
Because it was real.
Hey everyone, welcome back once again to Podcast Part 3, the Part 3 Podcast, your best and brightest source for all things about movies that came after two other movies. As always, I am Sam.
And I am Will.
A real overcooked piece of meat here. We are talking about The Hobbit, The Battle of the Five Armies, because why not?
Peter Jackson's last directorial foray into Middle Earth.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's
these are frustrating movies.
you fucking mainlined all three of these movies for this episode, Will. So how are you doing?
These movies are so frustrating. I mean, I've mentioned it many times here before, but the first Hobbit movie I saw in the theater with you, Mr. Sam, and it was in 48 frames per second, in 3D in the faux IMAX screen in Burbank, and I got a migraine about 30 minutes in, and it didn't let up until about the last 30 minutes. So there's a good chunk that I did not remember at all about the movie because my brain just decided it did not like the 48 frames per second and shut down.
Yeah, they really were hyping that frame rate in the marketing for the first one, and then they were real quiet about it for the second two.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people like had problems like me where they got just like they were just very like sensitive to it. And I know it even happened on the recent Avatar movies too, just not to the extent because it wasn't the whole movie, you know. But yeah, that first movie, so it turned me off so much that I didn't like the movie and I didn't want to bother with any of the others. So I had, in order to fully appreciate the Battle of the Five Armies, I had to watch An Unexpected Journey. And I watched all of these in the extended editions, except for Unexpected Journey, which for some reason is not streaming on HBO Max. I don't know why. It's just not there. The other ones are, but this one isn't. So I can't speak to how this movie is different from its theatrical release, just every scene in these three movies feels about 5 minutes too long. Like it starts too early and ends too late.
I've seen both versions. I saw all three of these in the theater. The first one I saw with you, obviously, in 3D with the higher frame rate, and the second two deliberately not so. I think this was the first one of these came out at that time, post the original Avatar, where there was a big boom for 3D movies,
yeah.
And 4K was kind of really coming into its own on home video. And there was also this new high frame rate because it was the idea was it would make the experience as realistic as possible. And I think the problem here is that Pandora and Middle Earth should not look realistic in that, yeah. They should look like just shit you see on the sidewalk. This is the definition of a fantasy world, and there should be some suspension of reality, if you will.
Yeah, and I think the technology was in such an infancy that you could really see like all the seams. It wasn't even the image was so crisp that not only could you see sort of like the compositing work, but you could also see like brush strokes on the makeup. Well, and it was just too much.
Well, I think that's the problem is if you use all the technology at your disposal to make Gandalf look as realistic as possible, you'll realize Gandalf looks like beloved actor Sir Ian McKellen wearing a wig and a fake nose and contact lenses.
Yeah, and a weird beard. And then you also sort of see a lot of the seamless sort of tricks, camera tricks they used in the original Lord of the Rings. You see sort of like, you see the tricks and you see sort of how they're doing it. And like all the dwarves looked very made up and very like, very soap opera-y. And it was so distracting on that level, on top of my just having an actual migraine from the process.
Their attempt to make something more realistic ultimately made it look more artificial.
Yeah.
And this is what we're talking about here is The Hobbit trilogy, which came out in 2012, 2013, and 2014. And what we're talking about here is a domino effect of bad ideas. In, like, not necessarily making a movie of The Hobbit set in the same world as The Lord of the Rings. That's a good idea. But The Hobbit is a very small book. And they had the same logic as they had with The Lord of the Rings movies, which is we're only going to make our cash back if we make three movies. Now, originally they were going to have a distinct identity with a different director, in this case Guillermo del Toro. And they eventually, for reasons that will never be probably clear, essentially he left because he felt he didn't have time, even though he'd spent 18 months on pre-production design. So they threw all of that out. Now, having done that, they had to get Peter Jackson back on board to direct, even though he had no intention of directing these, because the last movies, as good as they were an exhausting experience.
Right.
He had to he had no lead-up time to production. They were completely winging it for a lot of what they were doing in these movies in terms of set design, choreography, special effects. Now, because they were shooting in 3D for three movies, they had to abandon so many of the visual tricks that they did in the originals, like the depth of field thing where you have a little table and a big table. All that's gone. So those scenes with Gandalf and the dwarves, it's usually him alone in a blue room. There's this amazing footage of Ian McKellen just breaking down on this movie because he has no one to interact with.
Yeah, he looks so sad in that footage and so just distressed and confused. And he doesn't know which way is up.
But yes, yeah. we talked about this with Lord of the Rings. We all know The Hobbit. I think if anyone's read a Tolkien book, it's probably been The Hobbit, which is a fun little fantasy read, very different from Lord of the Rings in terms of stakes and tone and scope.
Yeah, and it's nominal. It's sort of connected to Lord of the Rings in two aspects, and like three characters really: Bilbo, Gollum, and Gandalf, and the ring. Like, those are sort of how it's connected to the Lord of the Rings, but really it doesn't have like a strong connection thematically to a lot of what that trilogy is doing. And the biggest problem with this movie, with these three movies, aside from the fact that they are three and not like two, is that it anytime it strays away from the main characters of Bilbo or the dwarves, the movies just fall apart and become uninteresting. Anytime they start bringing up the necromancer, my eyeballs just start rolling back into the back of my head because I'm just like, what are we doing here? And it starts feeling very much of that Star Wars prequel-y type thing where it's like, we need to connect every aspect of these movies to the old movies.
But even worse, because the events of the Star Wars prequels at least are major characters and events that directly lead into the original trilogy. This is working overtime to create a connective tissue that was never there in the book. So I think the original idea with Guillermo del Toro's movies was it was going to be two movies, and the first one was essentially The Hobbit, like the story from Bilbo's point of view, and the second one was going to be more of the other stuff, some of the necromancer stuff that was happening with Gandalf when he wasn't with the party. That would be sort of a bridge movie from The Hobbit to the original trilogy, which I think is fine. It works better that way.
And I think makes more sense, and sort of, because what happens, especially in this one, this one and the second one, is it sort of bifurcates the narrative where you're spending a lot of time between sort of Bilbo and the dwarves, and then you're also going off to doing what Gandalf is doing. And honestly, it's willy-nilly in the way that it cuts back and forth. It's never sort of like organic in the way that it jumps between the two narratives.
No, because it's just because Gandalf isn't important to the main story. He shows up, you know, he kind of comes in and out of the original book.
Yeah, he just kind of fucks off at some points. He's like, Bilbo, you take this.
I have other things to do. I'm a busy wizard. Like, the number of characters in this movie that are major characters that are, like, I can rattle them off, that are not in the book. Radagast, Galadriel, yeah. Sauron, Saruman, Legolas, Toriel, right. who's just a completely made-up character, for these movies, all of Bard's family, right. Alfred, the head of Lake Town, played by Stephen Fry. I mean, I could probably keep going, but it is just all of, and I'm not, with a few exceptions, everyone I just listed gets a lot of screen time.
So much screen time. Every time that Alfred showed up, I was like, okay, this is his last scene. And then he'd come back. He has like this whole comedic bit. He has a running running thing through this whole movie. Yeah.
He doesn't die in the theatrical version. We don't even get that resolution with him.
Oh my God.
You see him, he's just hiking up his like, he's in drag and he's just sauntering off.
Well, that's what I thought his last scene would be, but I don't know why he's in the movie.
I don't know what they thought they had with him. He's like, did they think like someone had hit their head and forgotten that Grima Wormtongue is not a comedic character, right. and that he's not like played for laughs, but they just have that. But he's a Wormtongue for another character we don't care about.
Right, because the politics of Lake Town are completely uninteresting on any level.
Like, I get just wanting to flesh out Bard the Bowman a bit, because in the books he's literally
just
like...
He just kind of shows up, shoots
the
thing,
there,
and then...
He's a good archer, and he hits Smaug, and that's what... You know, like, you need maybe more than that, but we don't need this much.
I mean, and I'm okay with him having, like, a family, but it's just the way that it dovetails into, like, this... weird comedic Game of Thrones like thing is just so just it's so weird and part of the, again because then this movie then becomes you then fracture the narrative even more. You have Bilbo, you have Gandalf's story, and then you have the people of Lake Town, you have their story,
multiple like, parties of dwarves split up, you know,
right? It's just and it's all over the place, and it's like, but the thing is that makes it so frustrating is that anytime it was basically about Thorin and Bilbo, I was invested. I was basically like, I was like kind of intrigued. I was, you know, willing to go along with the journey.
Oh, Thorin. Shut up, Thorin.
I mean, he gets really, well, again,
imagine,
part of the problem
but it's like if you were watching Lord of the Rings and they gave Aragorn Denethor's arc and you were still
right,
supposed
exactly.
to root for him. Like,
yeah.
It's,
I mean, and I get it. That's kind of like a part of the thing is that, like, you know, absolute power and greed corrupts absolutely, and that's sort of the message. But it's so, again, because this is a story that does not demand to be 9 hours long. You have to wait. These arcs have to sort of like trudge along the way to get there.
And what you got in between are set pieces that are just. Not compelling and not interesting and don't look very good.
Yeah.
And some of them are you know, like better than, well, like the problem with this movie above all else is that it peaks in the first 15 minutes.
Right.
Like it never gets better than the Smaug stuff because he's the best part of the second movie. Just like, you know, like the two best scenes in the whole trilogy are just, a one-on-one with Bilbo and another character.
You know,
it's Gollum in the first movie and Smaug in the second movie. And you get a little bit of Smaug in this. And then it's just like a bunch of people milling around for like 2 hours.
Yeah, until they all just start fighting. And the fighting just goes on and on and on and on and on. And on. And eventually it gets to the point where you're like, oh, here's another troll with like weird swinging maces for arms. And I just started wondering, like, what does he do when he poops? How does he go to the bathroom?
I think he just goes.
Probably.
I think it's just like goats or horses or something. That's a lot of extended edition stuff is a lot of the weird dwarf chariots. A lot more, all the dwarf like technology stuff in the battle is in the extended version, which I actually kind of like because you don't get a lot of that in the originals. But at the same time, it's just like you don't care what's going on because there's nothing at stake except this mountain full of gold. Like they try to make it sort of like, oh, this would be advantageous, and it's all these orcs are, you know, if they get this, it's, you know, a Sauron. It's a great strategic mountain. The slopes, yeah, when it snows, the money they could make if they put in a lodge, you know. It's...
So about an hour into the movie, I was like, wait a minute, why does everyone want this mountain again aside from the gold? And then Gandalf is like, oh, it would be a great strategic place. And I was like, oh, thanks, Gandalf. Thank you for that. And it's like, oh, okay, I guess that makes sense.
There's Dune worms in this movie.
There's so much.
I'm just thinking of Galadriel carrying Gandalf like he doesn't weigh anything because she's an elf.
And it's another, that's a moment where it's like, okay, he dies and is resurrected in the original movie. So in the original story. So it's like, why is this happening here? Why is he like so weak that he has to be like,
he got smacked around by Sauron. And right, so she's got to call in all the OGs from the previous trilogy for a little fight. And it little Christopher Lee stunt double getting his paycheck, you know,
which is fine. It's just all well and good, but it just undercuts Gandalf's arc upcoming, is it's like he's already done it.
I mean, well, that's the thing. There's, you know what happens to all these characters. You're never, right, like, with the exception of, like, I guess the only character where you don't know what's going to happen to them is Tauriel.
True.
You know, because she's, you know, she's a completely fabricated character. Because, yeah, there are no women with speaking roles in The Hobbit, and yeah, barely any in the original Lord of the Rings. But it's like, we don't need to spend that much time with Legolas, and we don't need him to have a love triangle with her and the pretty dwarf. The prettiest dwarf.
The prettiest of all the dwarves. We don't. And why does it hurt so much?
We don't need to spend that much time. Like, there's some inspired casting in these movies. Like, Martin Freeman is a brilliant casting choice. Lee Pace is great. Billy Connolly's in this movie. Like, right. I really like some of the casting choices. I'm not invested in any of the characters.
No, I mean, and like I said, I mean, it's Bilbo and Thorin's story, and it just... a lot of the time when they're on screen or it's about them, particularly when it's about Bilbo, I'm kind of marginally more invested than in all the other nonsense. But
even still, by this movie, they've had the same arc like three or four times where he's right, like, all he cares about is his bed and is getting back to his little hobbit hole. And then he'll have a moment later after Bilbo does something where he's like, I misjudged you. I've never been so wrong. And then they have a big hug, and the fandom makes some saucy art of them, and we keep going.
Yeah, well, and I mean, and that's just, I mean, not just, because it's, again, it's that domino effect of bad decisions, but it's the, let's split this story that can't justify 9 hours into a 9-hour story. And so it has to just, these arcs just have to run in place until, you know, they get somewhere where it, you know, but again, it just sort of recycles and recycles and recycles over and over again.
And because of that, all this extraneous stuff that we're dealing with, we never get to know most of the dwarves as well, the right, characters from the actual book.
Right, and it's even more frustrating because there's 12 of them, and then there's all these extraneous characters too, and you're like, I have to keep all of these people in my head, including Bjorn, the shape-shifting guy who's only in the second movie for like half a second.
Yeah, he's in the book though. He's a book guy.
He is in the book, but like the
what bums me out is you just know if Del Toro had made these, that's the Ron Perlman role.
Of course, yeah.
And that just makes me sad.
Yeah, but it's also the Battle of the Five Armies in the book, at least from what I remember. It's like a page at most, and Bilbo's knocked out for
he's unconscious, much like he is in this movie.
Yeah,
but it's like, I get if you want to have a big battle in your movie, but it's also just like, it's in this like void, this big gray space, and it's a bunch of elves you don't know, and a bunch of dwarves you just met, and a bunch of orcs from one place and a bunch of orcs from another place, and that's it. And they just sort of...
And the humans, too. They're there.
But they're barely in it. Like, yeah. You know, they're a bunch of humans, and, like, they're... I don't know. It's, like, it's just... It just doesn't work. It's spread so thin across three movies, and by the time you get to this one, even though this movie in its theatrical length is only 140-something minutes...
Really?
Yeah, okay, which, yeah. And I think it's not that much longer in the extended cut, it feels endless. It's interminable. This was a really hard watch for me.
It really was. And just because that final battle, it just goes on and on and on. And it's like, oh, here's the chariot race on the ice. Oh, here's the one guy controlling the orc with the weird hands. And it never ends. It just never ends. It keeps going. And then here's the love triangle nonsense. And then here's the Arkenstone stuff. And you're just like...
And here's Legolas doing, like, Mario stuff.
Right.
And, you know, it's...
Oh, my God, yes. Running along that...
Yeah.
The collapsing bridge where you're like, what?
Well, it's like... Yeah, they've established in prior movies that the elves are kind of weightless and stuff. But when you do something like that, it just looks... There's no other way to say it. It just looks stupid. It looks ridiculous. It's not. It doesn't match with the rest of the action, and it doesn't.
No.
It removes you completely from the scene.
Yeah, it makes everything sort of this. Yeah, it just this visual mush, and it doesn't fit tonally with the way that the movie wants you to think about the stakes. It doesn't fit tonally with the original Lord of the Rings. It feels like it's a slave of many masters, this shambling mess of a movie.
Yeah.
You know.
Led by a director who was clearly just kind of burnt out at this point.
Yeah. You know? I mean,
like, when you get glimmers of it, like when it's working, you're like, oh, I feel like I'm back in Lord of the Rings. But those moments are so few and far between.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you're right. It's the riddles in the dark sequence in the first movie with Gollum. I think that sequence really works.
The stuff in the beginning of the first movie in Hobbiton.
Yes.
Like, I like not so much the goofy, like, let's do the dishes song, but the when they're all sitting by the fire. Like, when they let some of the music come back in, like, I think it works. But then it just, every scene just drags on and on, and you have these... What are, like you said, like a one-page sequence has to become this insane action set piece, which they're kind of okay in a vacuum, but, like, they don't work. Like, the problem is the movies are trying to look and feel like The Lord of the Rings, but everything in them feels way too different from Lord of the Rings. And I think, like, if they tried harder to give these movies a different look and feel while still being in that universe... The way the prequels do. I cannot believe I keep coming back to the prequels as what you're supposed to do. But, like, when it comes to, like, forging an identity for yourself, they do that.
Yeah. No, I think you're absolutely right. I think, when they try to do their own thing and it doesn't feel like they're trying too hard to connect to these other movies, I think they mostly work. There's stuff I don't love, but it's not as cringy, I guess, as some of this other stuff.
Well, it's all the stuff that when they try to be different, it's still trying to be Lord of the Rings. Like, it's still set in that world. You're still stuck with that imagery. So it just feels like a more watered down version of Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Because also, like, all the effects... Like, so much of it is CG, whereas you had all these practicals and all of these, like, you know, like, live, actual orc costumes with prosthetics and stuff, and now it's, like, the big CG orcs, and it's...
Yeah, and they also make one orc sort of the supervillain of all of these movies, Azog the Defiler.
Mm-hmm.
And he feels like a Saturday morning... He feels like Skeletor more than anything else. Because he has, like, all these minions who show up in the other movies, too. That he keeps telling them to do things and they keep fucking up.
Yeah, his son. He has a son, which I just like.
And then he has another guy who shows up a little later, too. And you're like, why does he have all these dudes? Why?
I mean, I think the problem with all these movies is there's... like movies require a physical villain, and Lord of the Rings and this, with the exception of Smaug and sort of some villains you meet along the way, like the trolls, don't have like a physical villain that you can confront. So they create these essentially mini bosses.
Right.
And that's also like, we have to give this whole backstory to Thorin and all of that, which is also all a moot point because he dies. It's like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, he's got to become the king. He's got to have Aragorn's arc, but also has to like have a classic tragic fall in the way that these movies are constructed.
Whereas it's just like he's just a brave dwarf leader in the books, but then yeah, he dies in battle.
Yeah. And it you know, gives Bilbo a lesson about war and stuff. But like, you know, it just I tried rewatching the Rankin-Bass Hobbit, which I hadn't seen since I was like 12, for this, and I didn't. It does not hold up.
Some rough design stuff in that, you know.
The design stuff is fine. It's just it is the story, but in fast forward. It's just like we're going from one thing to the next.
There's a happy medium between 80 minutes and 8 hours. And I think what it is, I've never watched them, but there are multiple fan edits of this trilogy where they cut it down to like 1 4-hour movie, and like with not just cutting, but like they add effects. Like one example I recall is that when Bard kills Smaug, it's, you know, he does that thing with the arrow on his son's shoulders, which I don't know if that was the best option he had, but they literally, someone alters it so he's built like a makeshift thing out of wood, and so because his family's not in that cut. And, you know,
yeah.
And I think there is a lot of good stuff in here. All the act, like the main actors, like Ian McKellen's great, Martin Freeman's great, Richard Armitage is very good. You know, I think if you can distill it down to that and focus on that, I think you'd be in a much better place. Also, Del Toro wanted Brian Blessed as Thorin.
Oh, and he'd be perfect. He's perfect for Thorin.
He'd be great.
Yeah, I think that's what you'd need. You'd need a Del Toro, and maybe I think Del Toro might have been too much, but you need someone with a very distinct style and hand. Like you said, Sam, I think you just need someone to like make it its own thing while also kind of being part of the world. And this tries too much to connect these dots that don't need connecting. The audience can connect them, or, you know, however you want to do it.
But I think the thinking they had with Del Toro's version was also that it was going to be like, this is long enough before Lord of the Rings that the, you know, whatever age they're in, the third age or the fourth age, it's not quite at its end yet. Because you see in Lord of the Rings, it's like a lot of the stuff is sort of decaying and abandoned, and like a lot of sort of the splendor of Middle Earth has gone to seed a little bit. And I think the idea in this one is that you'd be sort of seeing before that and the beginning of the end of that in The Hobbit. So it would look different. It would feel different. I can't believe I'm thinking of the prequels again, because I just described the prequels.
You did. I mean,
they at least should have been doing with the prequels.
Well, the prequels have the same problem too, where they have to connect these dots that don't need connecting, and sort of spend a lot of time connecting them. And you're kind of like, why are we doing this?
Well, it's because I can think of the prequels, and I can think of, if nothing else, visuals in the prequels that are unique to the prequels. That aren't just silly shit like Dexter Jetster or something, like stuff that's, you know, feels unique and interesting and fantastical that you only see in Phantom Menace or Attack of the Clones or Revenge of the Sith, and you don't see in the sequel movies and you don't see in the original trilogy, that give the prequels a visual identity of their own, even if the movies themselves don't really work.
I think
the problem with The Hobbit is that all it has... in lieu of that is just less interesting stuff that wouldn't make the cut for Lord of the Rings.
Right.
Like less interesting wizard, a less interesting orc, less interesting armies, less interesting elves.
Yeah. No, I think you're 100% right. Although I think there is some cool visual ideas, like the stag that Lee Pace rides.
Oh yeah. I mean,
that's kind of cool. And like some of the stuff that he gets up to, like, again, in a vacuum, you're like, oh, that's kind of neat. But again, it starts feeling like a video game and not a very good one at a certain point. And
just, I think they were just too rushed. They tried to do too much. They tried to do it too quickly. They didn't give themselves time to, like, this is the thing. It's like, if you're going to make sequel prequels to The Lord of the Rings, you have a really high bar to get over.
Yeah. Yeah. So why do you think, and my hunch
is... It hurts so much?
Well, yeah, why do you think it hurts so... But why, more to the point, why do you think that was added, that whole love triangle? Is it just sort of, we need a woman in here. Women have love triangles. That's the thing, right? Like, is that sort of thinking?
I think it's a compounding of a few different things. They wanted a female character.
Right.
With lines, who isn't, I don't know, Belladonna Took or one of the Sackville Bagginses. So they created this character Toriel. They wanted a character from the original Lord of the Rings to be a major part, and the only one that really makes sense is Legolas.
Right.
So they bring him in, and then they have dwarves as your main characters, and dwarves aren't sexy, so let's make some of the dwarves kind of hot. And so now you have all of these attractive characters anchored by an actress who's very famous for a love triangle. And all of that was in reshoots as well.
Right, right.
Like, the whole love triangle thing is... Because you notice, like, Legolas is into her, but, like, he kind of... Up to a point. It's
yeah,
like
he
kind of
just doesn't
like,
care at a certain point.
He doesn't
point,
care.
Yeah.
Like, they're just good friends. And,
yeah.
I think that's it. I think it was just, like, they needed... You have a touch of romance in the original trilogy with Aragorn and Arwen, and this was the only way you could do that, because every other time, the only other thing they sort of try is that weird Gandalf Galadriel thing,
right, which is so weird and so strange.
I'm watching it and I'm like, I'm fairly certain she's canonically married. Like, I'm pretty sure we met her husband in the original movies.
Yeah, it's so, it's like, it really comes out of nowhere, and I guess because Gandalf and her never interact in the original movies, but it's just in the original story anyway, but I don't know. Where did that come from, like an appendix somewhere?
I don't know.
Where did that, like, come from?
I think it's just, you know, it's...
Was that like a post-it note on Tolkien's wall, like Galadriel plus Gandalf? Question mark?
Gandalf? Horny?
It just feels like so random.
I you know what? Here's the thing. I bet Ian McKellen and Cate Blanchett thought it was a bit of fun and just indulged it.
I'm sure they did. But nothing against them. But, like,
but it's like, we don't need that. No one is asking for Gandalf to have a girlfriend.
No. It feels like a bad studio note. It's like, can Gandalf have a girlfriend?
Does he want it? Is he into anyone? Is he seeing anybody?
I don't know, I guess.
I think it is also just that endless, perpetual, and we talked about this with Return of the King, and they probably remembered it from that, just this perpetual fear of, you know, everyone has to be like, no homo, you know?
Right, yeah.
Who's getting shipped, you know?
We can't have, like, an earnest male platonic relationship. We gotta have a lady in there.
Yet they still, the biggest relationship arc in the movie is still Bilbo and Thorin, so that's a full moot point.
Doesn't really solve that problem.
And it is just, all of that is, it doesn't matter, because it's like, Feely, I believe it's Feely, he dies, she doesn't end up with Legolas, she goes off to do whatever, we never see her again, and Legolas... Lee Pace is like, you need to go north and get Lord of the Rings started.
It's like, you need to go babysit Aragorn.
You should go meet this. He should meet this ranger. He's a cool guy.
Okay. And I hate, like, how he looks at the locket. It's like, oh yeah, that's Gimli, and he's like, ugh. You're like, come on, guys. We don't need these.
The end where it's like Ian Holm and they like Gandalf knocks on the door. It's just like, time to start Fellowship of the Ring.
Well, I mean, I think probably the idea was, it was like, oh, you start here, and then it's like, if you're doing your movie marathon, you're like, oh, okay, I'll put in Fellowship of the Ring now.
Who in God's name would be in the mood if they say they were going in completely blind after watching these three movies? Who in God's name would be want to watch three more, even if they are great?
No one. No one would.
This is why people don't start with the prequels.
Just these boring slogs. Nothing really happens.
All right, those first three Star Wars were rough, but the next three are great, and then after that it's going to be pretty choppy. But bear with me, because these three are real good.
The middle three are really great.
These middle three are tight as hell, and then it's going to be decent, and then it's going to get really, it's going to be rough waters.
Yeah.
Ultimately, you're going to be left deeply unsatisfied.
You won't be happy. You just won't be happy. You see this on Reddit all the time, where it's like, what order should I watch the Predator and Alien movies? And it's like, anyone worth their salt is like, just watch them in release order, man. You'll be happier.
Yeah, no. They didn't think those movies...
It's like, no, man, you don't want to watch Alien versus Predator before Aliens? Come on!
Yeah, I don't think... I mean, you want to watch Prometheus first? Fine. Like, why? No, I think you should always watch shit in the order it was made in the real world, because you're watching the ideas evolve in real time that
exactly.
way.
Exactly, yeah. No, I think so, too, and I think...
Like,
you
who
know,
the fuck is going to watch the Fantastic Beasts movies first? Who the hell is going to do that?
No one. But yeah, I mean, and I recently started or finished watching Better Call Saul, and then stopped at the point where it starts to connect to Breaking Bad, and then I've started Breaking Bad. But that only works because I've seen the shows before. I don't.
Yeah,
think
and Better Call Saul is not constructed in a way where you have to be watching Breaking Bad at the same
exactly.
time.
Exactly. Yeah. That's just.
Yeah, you could do the same thing with the Star Trek shows from the 90s, you know, all that sort of thing. But all of this stuff that we're talking about works because it's not doing the thing that like comic books do with their summer crossover where you've got to read the main one, but if you want to know what the hell's going on, why did Spider-Man not show up till issue 3, you got to read Spider-Man number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 to find out what he was doing before he got to the main fight with the Skrulls or whatever's going on.
Right, whatever's happening. Yeah. And it's been real interesting watching the MCU try to navigate that problem. By interesting, I mean not.
I know, everyone, this is one of those things, just like we people with the Lord of the Rings movies, like, why didn't the Eagles fly them all away? Like, why didn't they, you know, it's, why in Winter Soldier did he not call Thor? You know, it's like, because Thor's doing his own thing in a
busy.
Different comic book. Yeah. It's just like... Because shut up, that's why.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, it's, but then it's, what's been problematic with the MCU, and we talk about this a lot, is sort of where it's like, oh, you have to watch these 5 TV shows, and then you can actually understand, you know, Captain America, Brave New World. It's like, no!
Incredible Hulk 2, you mean?
Yeah. oops, no Hulks. Or oops, no Hulk. One Hulk.
You can basically, if you've seen the poster, you've seen the whole movie.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's what happens when your big reveal is revealed by McDonald's toys, I guess.
Hey, the McDonald's toy I got was a character who got cut in reshoots. There was no pink-haired Rosa Salazar in the movie I watched.
I remember looking at the cast list before I walked into the theater and being like, oh, Rosa Salazar, cool. And then she was not in that movie.
Yeah, I was like, where's Seth freaking Rollins? Yeah. And I think the problem is more movies now feel like The Hobbit than they do The Lord of the Rings, because The Hobbit movies were made more, air quotes, efficiently. Yeah. And I think it's why this movie is so jarring coming after Avatar Fire and Ash, which is, you know,
right.
It's not Avatar Fire and Ash is not the business model for how we should be making all blockbusters, where you give a madman $500 million and put him in a room for 3 to 15 years. But when you do that, and he's the kind of madman who cares, you're going to get a beautifully made movie.
Right. Yes. But yeah, otherwise you get sort of factory churned out product. It's kind of just content. And that's kind of what these Hobbit movies feel like.
They just don't feel like they don't have the passion of the originals. Yeah. They just feel they don't have the soul. They just feel kind of lifeless. And that's sad, because I remember being excited to see a lot of these characters again. And I remember being excited for the casting. I thought Martin Freeman was great, and Benedict Cumberbatch was all over these movies. And I don't know, like, it works in spots, but it's just it feels so empty.
And it's just boring. I mean, more than anything else, they're just kind of boring.
Yeah, this was a slog. Like I said, it barely cracks 2.5 hours, and it felt endless.
Yeah, it just keeps going and going and going. So many fights. We've got to get to that tower. Okay, now we need to get to this tower. Okay, now this guy's under the frozen lake. And it's like, why can't we just, like, what are we doing?
When you're a little kid and you're watching Return of the Jedi, you might be more into the space battle or the Ewok fight than you are, like, the stuff on the Death Star with the Emperor and Luke and Darth Vader. But the nice thing is, you're going to get back to the thing you're more invested in a couple of minutes. This is that, but you don't care about anything of the threads.
Yeah, it's just noise at a certain point, and your brain just kind of turns off.
All the different modified trolls made me think of all the, like, extraneous villains in 300.
Yes, yes.
Like, it made me think of, remember the executioner in 300, where he's like a big... He looks like a huge version of Charlie from Smiling Friends, but with, like, saw hands. And I'm like, that can't be the most efficient way to execute people. Cultivating that gentleman, you have a... Just use a sword.
Just use a sword. What are you doing?
Yeah, who is this, like, guy? Is he someone's cousin?
There's one guy who has, like, a goat head in there's that
just,
movie,
well, yeah, there
too.
Was one just one guy who's a goat.
What? That's a weird movie.
But at the same time, have you ever seen the sequel?
No.
And the sequel's got some fun stuff in it, but the sequel's not Zack Snyder, and it's not Frank Miller source material. And I don't know what it is that 300 has, but that one's missing it. You know?
There is something. I mean, and it clearly activated something in certain fans of... certain types of bros I don't know. It did. It has something that the 300
bros
has
that,
something.
Bros that like hanging out. Bros that don't know, haven't quite grasped what these guys are doing on their downtime.
Right. Yeah, and if they did, they'd be really upset.
Or very excited.
Or very excited. No, that's true. Zack Snyder has never made a part 3, and judging by the fact that the Rebel Moon... Okay, actually, Justice League, I guess technically, is a part 3. Yes,
I don't want to
okay.
rip that Band-Aid off. That is not my pick for our next movie.
Not after this one. That's too long. No. God, 4 hours, man. We just watched, like... But 12 hours of movies between Return of the King, this, Avatar.
we're just sitting on that cliff, just, you know, like, you're all shell-shocked, I'm just lighting up a pipe, and no one's saying anything. But anyway, are we one star for the five armies?
This is one star. There's no way around it. This one's bad. Nothing works, and it's just frustrating that it doesn't work.
It's not even that good an end to a trilogy. It's just wheel spinning. You're cramming 10 pounds of shit in a 50-pound bag. You know, it's the reverse of the metaphor. I just didn't do anything. It's not an enjoyable experience. And coming off right off of Return of the King, which is a masterpiece in comparison, and right off of Avatar: Fire and Ash, which is visually has so much TLC put into it, it just does not hold up.
Nope. Yeah. So one star.
All right, everybody. If you ever wonder why it hurts so much, it's because it was real.
It was real.
Yeah.
Happy 2025, or happy end of 2025, everyone.
Yeah. Go back to the shadow 2025. Good night, everybody.
Adios.